I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen, and Happy New Year. Welcome to 2021. Just started a new year, so I hope everybody had a really good Happy New Year celebration. On today's show, we are going to continue our discussion with Jerry Branum. We do this at the end of every year, where we go back 40 years, 50 years, and 30 years, and we talk about the competitions that happened in the past. So this being the end of 2020, Jerry and I last week and the week before that, we went over 1970, where we talked about the Mr. America contest that Chris Dickerson won. We also talked about the 1970 Mr. World contest that was held in Columbus, where Arnold beat Sergio for the first time. And then last week, we talked about the 1970 Mr. Olympia, where Arnold beat Sergio, who was the three-time winner, and Arnold became the new Mr. Olympia. And we also talked about the 1970 NAVA Mr. Universe, where Arnold won his fifth Mr. Universe in the pro division, and Frank Zane won the amateur Mr. Universe. So today, we are moving on to 1980, and Jerry and I, of course, are going to talk about the infamous 1980 Mr. Olympia, which I think is probably the most talked about Mr. Olympia contest in the history of the sport. And we ended up talking for a whole hour just about the Mr. Olympia contest. So we talked about, of course, a lot of the backstage stuff that happened. If you're not aware, this was the contest where Arnold Schwarzenegger came back after a five-year absence. He retired in 1975, and he surprisingly came back in 1980. He didn't tell anybody about it. He only trained for supposedly 8 weeks, and he just popped into the contest, and he ended up winning it, beating all the current champions. And it created a lot of bad blood between Arnold and the rest of the bodybuilding world, because not only did he not tell anybody he was competing and not only did he win, but a lot of people felt that there was some favoritism given towards Arnold because he knew a lot of the judges. Arnold, of course, was not at his best because he only trained for 8 weeks after a five-year layoff. So his legs were very thin. He had some really strong points, like his arms were still great and his upper body was good. He was tall, wider than everybody else, but a lot of people felt that it was not enough to beat the best bodybuilders in the world at that time, who included Mike Mentzer and Chris Dickerson, Frank Zane, the current champ. So there were 16 competitors in the Mr. Olympia, and Jerry and I are going to break it all down. We're going to talk about stuff that happened backstage. We're going to talk about all the competitors in the show, not just Arnold and the top guys. A lot of times when we talk about the Mr. Olympia from 1980, we don't talk about the guys who placed out of the top 10. But me and Jerry are going to talk about everything that happened at that 1980 Mr. Olympia. So our interview with Jerry will be coming up in a couple minutes. Before we get to that, I do want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right, so I got some really bad news, of course. You probably have heard that our friend Peter McGuff passed away last week on December 29th. 71 years old, and Peter has been battling cancer for, I think, 7 or 8 years now. And he had prostate cancer, and he just keeps battling it. I mean, when he got it
a long time ago, they told him he only had like a 30% chance to live. And I think they were saying he was only going to last like another year, but he kept battling it. And I was hoping Peter was going to finally beat it. But I had heard over the last few months that he wasn't doing well. I heard that he was in hospice, which is usually a bad sign, because usually when you go to hospice, that's the end. And sure enough, he did pass away last week, right at the end of the year. So Peter was a friend of mine. I've known him. Well, I actually got to meet Peter when Sean Perrine had his website, Iron Age, which had a real good bodybuilding forum. And this was before the days of Facebook. It was the early 2000s. And so that's how people communicated, was you go on a website and they would have different forums, and then you could just talk to each other. And Iron Age, we were talking about the old days of bodybuilding. So Sean Perrine was on there. This is before he got his job working for Muscle and Fitness. And Peter McGuff was on there. And I got to meet a lot of great people. And I was on there all the time. I was going on there every day talking about the old days. So I got to know Peter a little bit through that. And then when I moved to Florida, I got to spend more time with him, because he would go to a lot of the competitions, especially the ones held by Tim Gardner. And I would get to talk to him. Sometimes we'd all go out drinking afterwards or be in the hotel bar having some fun. Peter was a really, really great guy. I've had him on my podcast several times. In fact, we just had him on this last year in 2020. I think it was on the spring. So I'm grateful that Peter took the time to do those interviews, because I know a lot of times he was not feeling up to it. He was very sick. And so I really appreciate it. And he told me after one of them, he said it made him feel good to talk about the old days. So maybe we got his mind off the cancer for a little bit when he was doing those interviews. And me and Wayne Galash went out to see Peter. I think it was, it might have been like 5 years ago. I think it was maybe 2015. But Wayne was in town. Wayne, of course, lives in Australia. So he was in the Florida area, and he visited Doris Berrio, who was the mother of women's bodybuilding. She's like the one who started it, the godmother of women's bodybuilding. And Doris has since passed away also. She passed away a couple of years ago. But Wayne and I one day went over to Peter's house and did an interview for my podcast. No, it couldn't have been 2015, because it was when I had the podcast. So it had to be 2017 or 2018, probably 2017. And then we all went out to lunch that day. So Wayne sent me an email this week after he heard about Peter passing away. And he said he was really grateful to me that we did that. And he really enjoyed that day. And that was really special for him, because now Peter, of course, is gone. So Peter was a great historian in the sport. And a lot of people had a lot of respect for him, even though he was basically writing for the magazines, and the magazines are now all gone. I was always surprised at the current bodybuilders and the people that are in the industry, how much respect they really had for Peter over the years, especially as he's been sick. And people have always asked about him and had a lot of feelings for him, and they were hoping that he pulled through this. So that was great to see in the industry, that people really respected Peter, because he should have been respected. He was a great, great writer and really contributed a lot to the sport. Of course, he started off in England. He started his own publication called Pumping Press. And Joe Weider saw the work that he was doing, saw how great the articles were, and he was getting the issues out really quick. Back then, in those days, the turnaround time for a magazine was a couple of months. So after the Mr. Olympia was held, for example, it would take like literally months for the magazine to come out to report it. Peter was putting it together in like a week. So this got the attention of Joe, and Joe understood how talented Peter was, and he wanted to eliminate the competition. So he offered Peter a job and brought him up to California. And him and his wife, Ann, came up to California, and they worked for Joe. And then whoever the current editor of Flex Magazine was, Peter took that over. And he really put a lot into that and was very good friends with a lot of the stars of the day. And like I said, a lot of people had respect for him. And then after Joe sold the magazine, I think Peter went to work for Muscular Development for a little bit. And he also worked for Bob Kennedy for Muscle Mag. But I know he had a lot of respect for Joe Weider. And every time I've talked to Peter, he always had a great Joe Weider imitation. And then he also had a lot of respect for Joe, because Joe really loved the sport of bodybuilding, as did Peter. So rest in peace, Peter. Really sent out my condolences to his wife, Ann. I know they were so close. And the reason Peter fought this cancer so hard was just so he could stay with his wife. And he did not want to leave her alone. So eventually it got the best of him. So send all my condolences out to his lovely wife, Ann. I hope she's able to get through this with the help of her friends and family. And Peter does not have to suffer anymore. I know he's been going through a lot these last few years. So rest in peace, the great Peter McGuff. We will miss you, and I'm going to miss his friendship and miss talking to him on the podcast. All right. So I also want to announce, I think I mentioned this last week, I have a new fitness challenge coming up for the new year. So it'll actually start next week on the 11th, January 11th, which is 1 week from today. And we will start our new fitness challenge. This is going to be the second annual John Hanson Fitness Challenge. This will be a 12-week transformation program. So if you guys want to get in shape, or if you know somebody that wants to get in shape or is trying to get in shape, this is the program for them. So basically what I will do once you register for the program is I will write up a personalized workout and diet program for you. So I'll send you out a questionnaire. You'll fill it out. Tell me what type of food you like. Tell me what your schedule's like. And I will customize a program that's going to fit your schedule. So last year, I helped out some people who were training at home because of the COVID thing and their gyms were closed. I helped out some people who were going through some injuries and they weren't able to go heavy. So we can do any kind of program. It doesn't have to be like a regular gym program. If you're not doing that, I can just customize that diet and workout for you. And then what I will do is I'll follow up with you each week. So I check in with you, see how much progress you're making, see if you how much you lost off your waist, see how much weight you've lost. And I do this every single week. Sometimes I'll even do Zoom calls if you're up for that and want to do that. So I will just check in with you, make sure you're making progress. If you're not making progress, I will change your program, and I will also write up new workouts for you each week. So what I've been doing now with these fitness challenges is people will send me their workouts that they did in the last week, and I'll write up new workouts for them for the next week. So this way, you're not just going through the motions doing the same workout. You're actually challenging yourself, and you're pushing yourself harder by using more progressive resistance and using more weight each week. That helps hold on to the muscle. In some cases, like our last winner for the Fall Fitness Challenge, Nick Rizzitello, he actually put on muscle while he was losing fat. So this is the best way to make the maximum amount of progress in only 12 weeks. And of course, the diet is extremely important. And that's why I'm following up with all the people who enter these programs. I follow up with them every week. So it's a really, really great program. If you go to my website, johnhansonfitness.com, you can not only register for the program, but also check out some of the past winners, like the Summer Fitness Challenge we did over the summer and the Fall Fitness Challenge. Some of the progress these guys make just amazes me how much fat they can lose in only 12 weeks. So check that out. I hope you guys will join it if you're up for that. I know, of course, it's the new year. People want to get in shape, especially after the holidays. So check that out at johnhansonfitness.com, and you can register. You've got until next Monday to sign up because it will start on January 11th and go all the way up till April 5th. And the top three people who make the most progress, just like we did last year, will win prizes. And this includes free supplements from Old School Labs. And you'll also get copies of my books and my DVDs. So some great, great incentives to get in shape. And like I said, the best part is that I'll be working with you every week and I'll be your fitness coach for all 12 weeks. All right. And speaking of that, I've got some emails here. I got actually a couple emails from the winners of the Fall Fitness Challenge. So as I said, the winner was Nick Rizzitello. And if you go to johnhansonfitness.com, you'll see the amazing progress he made. And he sent me an email and he said, John, I can't believe I won the contest. I saw the results right before we ate Christmas dinner and I was blown away. I showed my wife the email and we were both so excited. I was fortunate to spend Christmas with my family and this was the icing on the cake to our great day. I was so happy to tell my kids that I was in the contest and I won. My son couldn't believe it. This was such an honor and a dream come true. I would write in my workout journal every day notes like, win, wake up and do your cardio, give it all you got. I would also listen to your podcast and take inspiration from them, like when Frank Zane called himself Mr. Olympia for the whole year and he visualized it so that it would happen. I did the same thing during my contest. I would tell myself I would win it and I would even picture what my physique would look like at the end of the contest. Thank you so much for your guidance and all the work you put in with my diet and workouts. I owe you so much. Nick Rizzitello. All right. Congratulations, Nick. Great victory. And like I said, check out those pictures of Nick from the contest. All right. Our second place winner in the Fall Fitness Classic, which just ended right before Christmas, was Mario Uriel. So Mario, if you read his profile on the website, he was in his 50s, late 50s, and he had a couple accidents. He fell one time and he hurt his shoulder and it really messed him up for a couple of years. He couldn't work out. And just as that was getting better and he was rehabbing it and he was starting back in his workouts, he had another fall, and this time he messed up his elbow. So when I designed Mario's program, we had to go with really light weights, and I tried to do like supersets and tri-sets and giant sets, so we increased the intensity of the workout so he was able to hold on to that muscle tissue and even build a little muscle while he was losing the fat. And I was absolutely amazed at Mario's progress. Now, halfway through the program, after 6 weeks, Mario had to get some medical procedure done, and he was not allowed to work out for a couple months. So he had to basically end the program after 6 weeks. But he made such progress in only 6 weeks. You will not believe it when you see these pictures. Fat he lost on his waist was absolutely incredible. So he ended up taking second place in the contest, even though he didn't finish the full 12 weeks. So when I told Mario this, he was shocked. And he wrote me an email and he said, "John, this is amazing. I never expected this. It's interesting that I never finished the challenge, but we did do something fantastic to my body. I think that we changed my metabolism. Although I'm not currently doing your program and I'm not doing any weight training because of the medical procedure, I have continued to exercise and I have continued to improve and lose weight. Currently at 178 pounds, my waist is 35 and a half. I should have continued. Who knows? Maybe I would have won." And then he said, "To be honest, I feel that I won the minute that I began your program. The time that you spent with me on Skype and the program itself was just amazing in itself. It's probably the best thing I ever did. Thanks for everything, Mario." Wow. Fantastic. So I love seeing these progress stories, and I'm going to be sending these guys out their books and their DVDs, and Old School Labs will be sending them their supplements all this week. So congratulations to all those guys. Nick Rizzitello, Mario Uriel, and my friend Mike Euler, who I used to train with back in the day. Mike was in third place in the contest. So congratulations to all those guys. And I hope to see some of you guys enter the contest. So as I said, go to johnhansenfitness.com and sign up. I also got an email here from Mark Johnson. Mark was second place in the challenge over the summer. And he said, "Hey, John, I hope you had an incredible Christmas and congratulations on being part of the official Olympia coverage this year. Honestly, if we could get Sean Ray, Jose Raymond, and yourself as the official Olympia commentators, I don't think it could get any better. I thoroughly enjoyed your and Jose's predictions and insights on the podcast, even though I only got a chance to listen to them after the Olympia. Congrats as well to you and the new finalists from another amazing fitness challenge. I have a quick training question that I've been struggling with. As you may recall, I started your fitness challenge back in June, and I was amazed by the progress I made by Labor Day. Over the past 4 months, I've continued to train and diet successfully to where I've been able to retain all the muscle I had initially and lose another 5 pounds. However, I've now reached a point that the fat loss has stopped short of where I expected it to be, and I was hoping for your opinion on whether to continue as I have been or to focus on adding muscle for the next few months with the hopes that the gains will be the spark necessary to get leaner when it's time to diet again. I'm sure that part of this uncertainty comes out of a fear of putting on excess fat, but also from having experienced the awesome feeling of gaining muscle and losing fat at the same time during your summer challenge. I know this is a pretty amateur question, but feel free to read this and your response on your podcast if you think it'll help anyone else out there. My best wishes for a successful and rewarding 2021. Thanks for everything, Mark Johnson." Yeah, so that's a really good question, Mark, because when you go through a program like you did, 12-week program where you're trying to lose weight and you also put on muscle at the same time, obviously you can't continue it forever. So what I told Mark to do was, if he wants to keep getting leaner, he probably has changed his metabolism because he's lost so much fat and he put on muscle. And I got the pictures of Mark also on my website. If you check them out, you'll be able to see. He wasn't really super fat when he started it, but you can see he totally changed his body. His waist was actually bigger than his chest. So by the end of the program, Mark's waist went down a lot, and he had added muscle on his chest and his arms. So he definitely changed his metabolism because he added muscle and he lost fat. So I think what Mark could do at this point is he could probably increase his calories overall, or he could have one day a week where he increases his calories. It's not really like a junk food eating day or a cheat day. He could just really increase the amount of calories he's eating on that one day by increasing the carbs, increasing the calories. And I think that will help keep his metabolism going faster, because after you've dieted for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, your body really starts to slow down. So he has changed his body composition. So I think now, because of the added muscle and the less fat, he can probably use more calories. Another option would be just to switch gears and just try to gain more muscle while trying to stay relatively lean, but not try to lose fat, but actually increase your calories and try to just gain muscle for a couple months, and then you could go back and then get leaner again. So this way you're changing gears and doing different things, you have different goals, and you're not going to get into a rut. That is the deal. If anybody out there has run into the situation and you guys want to use me as your coach, I do have month-to-month programs, which are pretty inexpensive, and I could help you just keep going every month, depending on what your goals are. All right. So I think that is all we got for our opening. Now, at the end of our interview with Jerry Branum, I do have another article from Pat Comer. Now, if you remember, like a week or two, Pat sent me the article about Chris Dickerson winning the Mr. America contest in 1970, but he only sent a couple pages of it, so we didn't finish it. So today, at the end of our interview with Jerry Branum, I'm going to read the rest of this article from Pat Comer. So it's actually pretty long, and it's really interesting. It's really great how these old Iron Man magazines really went into detail about the contest. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy this. And it's kind of funny to read because, of course, this was 50 years ago at the Mr. America. So some of these guys were not that big. But it's really interesting to read about all the background on some of these competitors. So I'll be reading that article as soon as our interview is over with Jerry Branum, where we talk about the 1980 Mr. Olympia. So let's get to that interview right now. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I have my good friend Jerry Branum with us again today. We are doing our year-end review. 2020 just ended. We're going to go back 40 years, and we're going to talk about the year 1980. Jerry, how you doing?
Okay, how you doing, John? I'm okay, thanks.
Good. Well, Jerry, can you believe the 1980 Mr. Olympia was 40 years ago? That's amazing,
isn't it? Oh, wow. It is amazing. It is. That's got to be, that in the 81, it have to be the most controversial, even to this day, the most controversial Miss. I think you would agree with that. Most people would.
Yeah.
But by far, the most controversial Mr. Olympia is 80 and 81.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Yeah.
And I think 1980 is probably the most talked about Mr. Olympia ever, even more than 81. I think people, they just, every time you mention that, on whether it's on Facebook or when they had the old bodybuilding forums, it just goes on for pages and pages, you know. I mean, some people feel Arnold still should have won, even though everybody agrees he wasn't as. Other people think, no, he shouldn't have won. All these other guys should have won, you know.
Yeah, and then the shenanigans that occurred during that contest, you know,
yeah.
About Columbo coming up on stage, from what I understand.
Yeah.
And wiping Arnold off. I mean, this is like against the rules. I mean, you know,
yeah.
You can't do this kind of stuff. And then, you know, there's a lot of other things that happened, like Bill Pearl was supposed to be the head judge,
yeah.
and he recused himself because Chris Dickerson, he happened to be Chris Dickerson's coach.
Right.
Which was a proper thing to do. Credit to Bill Pearl doing that. Because if Dickerson had won, you know, Pearl was smart enough to know, if Chris did win, and some people thought he should have won because he got second, that, you know, people would say, well, it's because Bill Pearl was the head judge. He gave it away. So yeah. Bill was very smart to you know, that was a very smart move to recuse himself as the head judge.
You know, on this podcast, on my show, I've done a lot of interviews with guys who were there, guys who were in the show.
Yeah.
And one of the guys I did an interview with was Roy Duvall.
Right.
Who was actually standing right next to Arnold. I think he was competitor number three, and Arnold was competitor number four.
Okay.
So I asked Roy about it, and I was talking to him, and he thought Arnold shouldn't have won. And he said, when you look at Arnold in the pictures from the contest, he looks a lot better than he did in person.
Now, that's interesting.
Very yeah, that was interesting. Yeah.
I have to tell you, I've examined videos from the show, the 80 Olympia.
Yeah.
And, of course, looked at the photos. And, you know, I look at it and say, okay, there's no question. I know Arnold very well. You know, I knew him from we trained together in the gym. I know what he looked like. I was with him in 74 in his best year. I know what he looked like at his best. And there's no question that Arnold was not at his best.
Right.
But, you know, you look at those great arms he had, and, you know, let's say, if you discount the legs were off by far. But if you look at the upper body, it wasn't at his best, but it was still, you could say, you know, might have been good enough, to, you know, because Arnold still overshadowed a lot of the guys with the mere size, right?
Yeah, the height and the width, yeah.
Exactly. But now you got a guy like Roy Duvall, who was right there, who gives you another kind of viewpoint that in person, Arnold didn't look that good. You know what I mean? And that gives a whole new spin on it. In other words, Arnold was probably a lot worse than I thought he was.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Because, I mean, the people that were, I've spoken to other people that were there too, the people that commented on that were almost violent about it, about how Arnold never have won. It was a total ripoff. I mean, I remember talking to Mike Mentzer, of course, who was what, fourth? Was he fourth that year?
Fifth.
Mike would get violent about it almost, not against me, but you know how crooked it was and this and that. It was fixed right from the start. And then I remember, who did I run into? I don't know, it was Frank Zane or somebody else. Right after the contest, I ran into somebody. Well, let me put it this way. Everybody who I spoke to about the 80 Olympia, including people that didn't compete but were there at the show, said the same thing, that Arnold did not deserve to win except only one person. And I know you know this, so you're going to laugh. You're going to smile. There's only one person that said Arnold deserved to win. His name was Franco Colombo, Arnold's best friend. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, and there's controversies. I mean, like behind the scenes controversy. I mean, the promoter of the show was a guy named Paul Graham.
Right.
Now, I'll tell you how I met Paul Graham. You'll see how this ties in with this contest. I met Arnold a week after he came to the United States. He was training at Vince's gym. We met in Vince's gym. Arnold was Joe Weider had rented a small apartment for Arnold about two blocks away from the gym. He rented a Volkswagen Beetle for Arnold to drive. Arnold wanted to show me what happened in Miami. I think we talked about this in a previous show about how Frank Zane, it was fixed for Frank Zane. But when I went into Arnold's apartment, the first thing I saw was a guy running around in boxer shorts, you know, just running around the room and not acknowledging either me or Arnold. It's almost like the guy didn't belong there. So I said to Arnold, I said, who is this guy? He says, oh, he's just a friend of my Paul Graham from Australia. He goes, right? So now you see how it ties in. And, you know, there's rumors that, you know, Arnold and Paul were involved in some illicit businesses and this and that. And Paul took the fall for Arnold.
And did
some time in prison, you know. So anyway, the point being that Arnold and Paul Graham were tight. They were close.
And he was in Arnold's wedding too, Jerry.
Yeah, he was at Arnold's. Well, I didn't realize that. Okay, well, they were close friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, and who's the promoter of the show? Paul Graham. So you could see how people would say, well, Paul Graham's a good friend of Arnold's. It was obviously fixed. You know, Paul Graham probably had a hand in it.
Why
Arnold won. Now, the same thing happened in 72 when it was held in Essen. In that contest, the promoter was, what's the name of the guy? He was the publisher of the German version of Joe's magazine.
If you see Jusek?
Jusek. Jusek was the promoter of that show.
Oh.
And who's Albert Jusek? Again, a guy at Arnold's wedding, one of Arnold's good friends. See how it ties in?
Yeah.
Because these guys were the head honchos at both of those shows.
Right.
And that show in 72, as we discussed previously, was also very close between Arnold and Sergio, with most people saying that Sergio should have won then. Sergio was at his all-time best, and yet Arnold still won, and some people ascribe it to this guy.
Albert Jusek. Okay, you're talking about 72, yeah.
But in Sydney in 80, now the situation was now Paul Graham's the promoter. So, you know, the thought is that he had something to do. You know, that's why Arnold got away with a lot of the little shenanigans he was doing at the contest.
Yeah.
You know, and this, you know, because Paul Graham was the promoter. I'm not sure what the promoter could do, how he could do that. I couldn't explain that, but a lot of people believe that, you know.
Well, another thing Roy said was he saw Bill Pearl dressed in a suit, a tuxedo, at night.
Right.
And he's like, what are you doing dressed in a tuxedo? And he's like, I'm going to be doing the commentary for CBS television. And he goes, I thought you were judging. He goes, no. He goes, I know what's going to happen. He goes, I don't want a part of it.
Oh, and wow.
Roy goes, what do you think about, I think Bill said, what do you think's going to happen? And Roy said, I think Arnold's going to lose. And he goes, no, he's not. He goes, that's why I'm not judging. He goes, I don't want a part of this monkey business.
Wow. See, okay, I assume that Bill, you know, recused himself because of Chris, but now we
maybe he did, but maybe he used that as the reason, you know. But
okay, that's what he did. He might have used that as the reason, which would be, I believed it. I mean, I believed it.
Yeah,
I know Chris Chuck and him were good friends, and he trained Chris, you know. But Arnold, I mean, obviously, I think Bill Pearl might know the relationship between Arnold and Paul Graham. And somehow that word that there was a fix going.
Yeah.
And Bill has a reputation that is important to him. Bill Pearl, I'm talking about. He wanted to make, he didn't want to be any part of something that had it, that could be tainted as being fixed. So he backed out.
Yeah.
Which would give, if you think about it, that gives credence to the idea that the contest was fixed for Arnold, if you think about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, another thing I heard was, I didn't know this before either. I interviewed Frank Zane earlier in the year, I think February. Yeah. And Frank told me that Dennis Stallard, you know Dennis Stallard, he was like the guy on stage. He was in Pumping Iron. He was telling the guys what to do with the poses and stuff.
Right.
So he was, again, on stage in 1980. And you know how Arnold wasn't hitting all the mandatory poses. They would ask for a side tricep, and Arnold would hit a bicep pose, you know?
That's right, yeah.
And then he was ignoring the judges' poses.
Yeah.
So Dennis Stallard told him, Arnold, if you don't hit the poses, I'm going to disqualify you. When they got to the night show, Dennis Stallard was fired and sent home.
There you go.
And that's going to disqualify Arnold, and they got rid of him.
Well, that's what I was also referring to earlier when I talked about Arnold's shenanigans that he got away with at this contest that normally would not have been. And the fact that they fired this guy, I mean, I have to say, it points to a fix.
I know. I mean,
why would they? I mean, you remember Oscar State? I mean, he wasn't there, right?
Yeah, he was there. He was calling the poses, and then Dennis Stallard was on stage, like directing.
I'm surprised that Oscar State wouldn't call Arnold on.
Yeah,
that, you know?
Yeah.
He was a pretty rule, you know, really rule oriented guy, you know.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that he would let Arnold get away with that stuff.
Yeah.
Oscar State was a no nonsense type of guy.
Right.
You know, and, under normal circumstances, Oscar State would say, you know, Arnold, either you comply with the judge's requests or we'll have to disqualify you right now.
Right.
The fact that he didn't say that is another piece of evidence that something was amiss with this contest.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And there was another story that I read in Randy Roach's book that the guy who used to run Australian bodybuilding for the IFBB, his name was Peter something. I can't think of his last name. But anyways, he was still involved with bodybuilding. But now Paul Graham was running it, and this guy Peter was no longer running it. But this guy Peter was supposed to be a judge.
Yeah.
So Paul Graham told him that the judges' meeting was at a certain time. So Peter's in his hotel room. And so about a half hour earlier, he leaves his hotel room to go to the – and they see him, and they go, hey, Peter, the judges' meeting started like a half hour ago. You're late. He goes, what? So Paul Graham told him the wrong time. So he goes running to the room, and they said, you can't judge now. You're late. So in his place, they put this guy named Brendan Ryan. Now, Brendan Ryan, I guess, was not a qualified judge, not for this contest, not for the biggest contest in the world. But he was a big, big Arnold fan. He loved Arnold. So they put him in his place. And then somebody did an article. I think it might have been Randy Roach in his book. He might have talked about it. He said if they would have counted, because this guy, Peter, who used to be the head of Australian bodybuilding, he was still judging it. He was still sitting there, but his scores didn't count. They said if his scores would have counted and Brendan Ryan's scores wouldn't have counted, Chris Dickerson would have won.
Wow.
One judge. Yeah.
Another piece of evidence. So
yeah,
I have to say that right now, based on all we've just discussed, that the contest was fixed.
Yeah. And then if you look at the judges, I mean, they had Reg Park as one of the judges, Albert Busack. That Mitz Kuasima from Hawaii, you know, all of Arnold's friends.
All of Arnold's big friends. I mean, Reg was Arnold's mother. Reg was an honest guy, but he was also, you know, he loved Arnold like his own son, right?
Yeah, well, Mike Metzer said that from the judges' table, Reg was telling Arnold what poses to hit.
and I remember Mitz. He brought me to Hawaii once for one of his contests. All he would talk about was Arnold.
He loves Arnold,
I met Mitz at one of the Arnold shows, and he invited me to come to his contest, and I did. But the only thing this man ever spoke about was Arnold.
Yeah.
He just loved Arnold. So, I mean, could you imagine a guy like that voting for anyone other than Arnold?
Right.
Impossible.
Right.
Arnold could have entered looking like a sumo wrestler, And I think Mitz would have still voted for him.
Right, right.
You know, I really believe that.
The thing we were talking about where Franco went up on stage, I read an interview with Franco, and he said what happened was, I think Arnold was standing like out of the light or something. You know, the light wasn't as good because he was on the one side of the stage. So Franco's trying to get his attention. He's trying to tell him, Arnold, move over, move over. And for some reason, Arnold was ignoring Franco. He wasn't listening to him, you know. So Franco runs backstage and he grabs a towel and he turns on stage and he has to towel him off. He comes on the stage and then he's whispers in his ear, you got to get over to your right. You know, you're in the bad lighting. So Arnold raises Franco's arm. He goes, hey, it's Franco Colombo, Mr. Olympia, you know.
I mean, come on, seriously. I mean, whoever got away with that kind of stuff?
Right,
You ever see anyone do that at any Olympia other than that?
I think that's where the controversy – that's why I think the competitors got so mad at Arnold. It wasn't just the fact that he won, you know, because he didn't choose it. The judges chose him as the winner. Yeah. But he just showed so much disrespect for everybody else. Yeah. I think that's why they were mad.
My favorite story, you know, which I think you discussed with one of the guys who was in the show. What's his name? That tough guy from England.
Roger Walker. Yeah.
Roger, the famous story about how Arnold and Mike Mentzer almost came to blows.
Yeah, that was another big thing about almost the fight. Yeah.
There's a famous photo of Mike with his back to the camera, you know, pointing
finger at him. Yeah.
Arnold just sitting there like, you know, like don't bother me, you fly. Right. Or something, you know, attitude. And, you know, because Arnold supposedly said to him something about, you know, Mike, they're never going to give the contest. I can hear Arnold say this too. They're never going to give the contest to a guy with a big belly like you. I can just keep saying that, you know?
Right. Now, Boyer Cole told me the story about that. He said that, you know, since 1975 or 74, the Mr. Olympia was held with the under 200 and the over 200 pound class.
That's right.
And then Boyer Coe and a few other guys told Ben Weider, we should just have one class, because what they were doing, and I saw this because I saw the contest in the late 70s, they would have the under 200 and the over 200. So they would pick three guys from the under 200, three guys from the over 200, and that was your top six. But sometimes you would have like four guys from the under 200 that should have been in the top six, and maybe only two guys from the over, but they would always pick three and three.
Right.
So Boyer Coe said, we should just have one class. We shouldn't have a division. So everybody agreed. I think there were 16 competitors in the 1980 Olympia. 15 out of 16 guys agreed, except for Arnold. Arnold was the only one who wanted two classes. And I think he figured if he goes in over 200, he could beat most of those guys. And then it would be him against maybe Chris Dickerson. He was looking at it like Chris Dickerson and Frank Zane might be tougher competition. I don't know.
Right. Well, I remember attending one Olympia, I think it was the 90s, and they had that Olympia press conference. I was, you know, writing for Joe at the contest. And I asked that question to the panel, to the competitors. And I was looking, I was looking at two particular competitors. One was Sean Ray, the other was Lee Labrada, because these are shorter guys.
Yeah.
And I think most people will agree that either one of these guys could have been Mr. Olympia, and both of them came close to winning the title.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, my God, if there was a under, a shorter, or like they have today, a 212 pound class, these guys would easily be Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
So I said to, this question is for Sean Ray or Lee Labrada, either one of you guys. I said, would you like to have a shorter class? I don't remember exactly. I didn't say 212. I said, shorter, where they used to have like a shorter Mr. Olympia, would you like to have that brought back? Sean Ray answered. And he said, absolutely not. I said, he says, because it would detract from the title. He says, there should be only one Mr. Olympia, not a short Mr. Olympia. And I said, well, Sean, I said, there's an old saying that a bigger guy is always going to beat a shorter guy. So doesn't that limit the chances of great bodybuilders like yourself and Lee Labrada from ever winning the title? So Sean said something to the effect that I'm not worried, if you're the best man, it's always going to win, something like that.
Yeah.
Of course, neither one of those guys ever won, but they came close. Now, this is the irony of it, is now you got Mr. Olympia, open 212 Mr. Olympia, right. Classic Mr. Olympia, right. Physique Mr. Olympia. Talk about detracting from the title. But right. of course, the funny thing is, not to mention Miss Olympia, but the point being that I think everyone still in bodybuilding looks at the open Mr. Olympia as the real Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one with the most prestige. I don't think that's changed, but it's funny though, that, that the guys that, you know, would have, I always thought that the guys that it would have benefited most didn't want it, you know, Sean and Lee. I found that very strange.
Yeah.
It just didn't make any sense to me. Because these guys would have won so easily. They would have been another guy would have won easily is Lee Priest.
Yeah.
You know, what a monster. Or Lee, or we want to go further, even Danny Padilla.
Yeah.
Danny Padilla would have won. I mean, if they had a short class Mr. Olympia, geez, he would have won the Mr. Olympia five times.
Right.
The guy had a perfect, I mean, he had a perfect physique.
Yeah.
No weak points at all. Zero. Yeah. Well, what a rare physique that was. His only problem was what? He was 5'3 or something. That's it.
Yeah.
He's just a little guy, you know, but what a physique that guy had.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So Boyer told me that they're at this meeting and Arnold walks in, and that shocked most people because people didn't expect Arnold to be competing. So, because he didn't announce it at all. He didn't sign for the contest earlier. He just came into the meeting.
Yeah.
So everybody's like freaking out about that. And then they started talking about this under 200, over 200 pound class. So Boyer stood up and he said, well, Arnold, why don't you tell us, you're the only one here that wants to have two classes. Why don't you tell us why, what's the reason? Why do you want to have two classes? And he said, Boyer, why don't you act like a man or something? And Boyer's like, what? You know, he goes, I'm giving you the floor, you know? So Mike Mentzer got pissed off and he stood up for Boyer. And he goes, hey, we're just trying to figure out why you want two classes. So then he goes, shut up, Mentzer. He goes, everybody knows you lost the Olympia last year because you let your stomach hang out. So that was it. He got pissed off and he ran toward Arnold and he pointed his finger at him and there was going to be a fight. And then I guess Bill Pearl and Ben Weider broke it up, you know. And,
that's funny. Yeah. Because Arnold in the weeks leading up to the contest, Arnold was going around saying he was just going to be the television commentator.
Yeah.
In fact, I saw Arnold at World Gym training with Wilkosch only about maybe a month before that Olympia. I stopped by World Gym because I wanted to speak to Bob Paris.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't there, but Arnold was there with Wilkosch. So I went up to Arnold. I said, you know, I looked at him. He's wearing the tank top and stuff, and he had a tan already. You know, and Wilkosch looked in good shape. He always was in shape. And I said to Arnold, I said, Arnold, are you training for something? You know, you look really, you look like almost in contest shape here. He was just a little bit smaller than he used to be, but he looked pretty good. He says, no, I'm just going to do the commentating at the Olympia. He says, and then I'm going to do a movie. I'm training for the movie. He goes,
Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah. That's what it turned out to be. Yeah. Conan the Barbarian.
Now, Samir told me another story. Samir said that he saw Arnold training in the gym, too, and he said he looked really good. But then he hurt his shoulder, and he had to get a cortisone shot for his shoulder. Uh-huh. And the cortisone shot held water, and he was holding water. So then I heard that at the prejudging, Arnold was really holding a lot of water. So not only was he smaller, but he was also holding water. And he was smooth.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
And then by the next day – or by the evening show. I'm not sure if it, I think it might have been later that day. I'm not sure if it, was, it probably wasn't a 2-day show, but they said by the evening show, he looked a lot better because he sweated out a lot of the water.
Oh, okay. Because seeing the photos, you can't tell. You didn't see,
no.
I didn't see much water retention. Those must have been taken at the evening show.
Because I remember reading in Muscle and Fitness magazine, and they said Franco saw Arnold in Australia and he was posing for him. And he's like, what the hell happened here? And Arnold said, well, I took a cortisone shot because I hurt my shoulder. He goes, you idiot, you're going to retain water. How are you going to get rid of the water?
Funny. Wow.
So anyways, Arnold ended up in first. And then we said Chris Dickerson was second. Zane, who had won it 3 years in a row, he was third. Boyer was fourth. And then Mentzer was fifth. And Roger Walker was sixth. Roy Callender was seventh. And then eighth place, I think, went to Dennis Tinerino.
Right.
Who was in ninth place? I'll have to look. Well, I know 10th place went to Padilla. A lot of people thought Padilla could have placed higher.
I would think so.
Did you see how he looked, how Padilla looked in that show? He looked great. Tom Platz was in ninth place.
Okay. Well, you see, when Danny was in shape, he had no weak points.
Yeah.
Nothing. He had calves, bicep, tricep, back.
He was big in that show, too.
Yeah, the only problem with Danny was his height. That was it.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, Chris Dickinson was no giant. He was only 5'6".
Right.
So, you know, so you wonder about I'm not really sure what they found, what the problem with Danny was.
Do you think that was Dickerson's best look ever?
I think Chris himself has said that.
Yeah, he did. He said in an interview with me, he said it.
I would tend to agree with that. He was in a
better in 80 than he was in 82 when he won it.
I was just going to say that. You know, I think he did look better in 80. He was almost perfect in 80. You know,
he really was.
When he won, he wasn't quite as hard as he was in Sydney in 80.
And even 81, I saw 81, and even Chris said this. He said he wasn't as thick in 81 as he was in 82.
Right. I think 80 is when he peaked out, yeah.
Yeah. And you know what's amazing about that too, Jerry, is they had those Grand Prix shows in the spring. Yeah. And here, I'll look it up. I know Chris won a ton of them in 1980. It was like, how could he peak for all those shows? And then he also peaks for the Olympia. I mean, wow, that was really amazing. He won the Night of the Champions. He won the Grand Prix in Miami, the Grand Prix in California, and then the Florida Pro Invitational. He won all those shows, and then he goes to the Olympia and he takes second place.
Wow.
Now, in comparison, Casey Viator was competing with Chris in those Grand Prix, and I think they were trading off. So the ones that Chris won, Casey got second, and the ones that Chris got second, Casey won. But by the time they got to the Olympia, Casey was way off. He was not peaked at all. He was way out of shape.
I don't even know. Was Casey in the 80 show? I don't even
Yeah.
know.
Yeah.
He didn't make the top 10?
No. I'll show you where he placed.
Wow.
He got 14th.
Holy Toledo. He must have really been off.
14 out of 16. Ken Waller was 16th. Samir was 15th. Casey was 14th. Roy Duvall was 13th. Tony Emmett was 12th, and Ed Corney was 11th.
Wow. Wow. I didn't even realize Casey was in the show. I completely.
Yeah, he was really off. He didn't look anything like he did in those Grand Prix shows.
Sounds like when he tried to enter years later, he tried to make a comeback in the Masters Olympia. I told you that story.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
He showed up. Oh, it was sad to see. I mean, he was so out of shape, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't even know it was Casey Viator. I mean, you know, he was I knew Casey pretty well. I went backstage and before I could say anything, he says to me, I know I look like shit. You know? So I wasn't going to say anything because I like Casey. I didn't want to, you know, hurt his feelings. And he says, you know, I got divorced again. Now, I don't know how many times he's been married. That's the way he put it. I got divorced again. And he says, I only trained a month for the show. You know, I'm thinking, Casey, you trained for an Olympia, whether it's Masters or not, a month? That's it? So what do you think? This is the Colorado experiment again? Yeah. You know, you remember that when he gained 63 pounds?
Yeah, we talked about that last time, yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of funny, you know.
And then Platt, you saw that movie, The Comeback, right?
So yeah.
They focused only on Arnold and Tom Platz in that movie.
For some reason, I guess they thought that Platts would be like Arnold's biggest competitor.
But or maybe the other competitors didn't want anything to do with it.
I don't. Maybe that was it. But I mean, it turns out that Platts wasn't even close to being.
No, Arnold. He was only ninth. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember seeing that movie where they showed Platts backstage when they were announcing that, and he looked horribly dejected. Do you remember that?
Yeah, he didn't make the top six. Yeah.
I mean, his head was hanging. He looked like he was going to like start crying any minute. You know, I felt bad about
that. Yeah. But what's amazing is how much progress he made in that from 80 to 81. My God. In 81, I thought he could have won.
In 81, he definitely could have won. He definitely could have won. In fact, I would say that in 81, it could have been either him or Danny Padilla. I would have had Franco no higher than third.
I would have him fifth.
Maybe even I don't remember who else was in the top five. You know,
Roy Callender and Chris Dickerson.
Oh, both of those guys were better than Franco.
Franco was behind all those guys. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that was another gift.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Arnold got the gift in 80, and his buddy got it a year later.
Yeah. Right. And but you remember in that movie when the day after the show they showed Platts in the gym? And they go, you're training already? And he's like, yeah, I got to get ready for next year. So that's interesting. When you look at what happened next year, you look amazing,
Right. Let me ask you, who promoted the 81 Olympia?
Arnold and Jim Lerner.
Yeah. You know what we're going to say here, right? After what I said, would go again. You know what I mean? I mean, Arnold's the promoter and his buddy wins. It's just the reverse of what happened with Arnold and the other guys. I mean, you know, I mean, I got to say, there's something to that, you know?
You know what else is interesting? The contest that's probably never talked about is about a month after the Olympia, Arnold had his pro Mr. Universe in Columbus. Right. So Arnold and Lorimer promoted the Olympia from 76, 77, 78, 79, then 80, it went over to Australia. So that was the first time since Arnold and Lorimer were promoting it that it went over, that somebody else was promoting it. So they said, well, you can't promote the Olympia, but we'll give you the pro Universe. So they promoted the pro Universe a month after the Olympia, and Arnold was promising that whoever won the Mr. Olympia would guest pose. Well, he won the Mr. Olympia and he didn't guest pose.
And he didn't guest pose.
No. No, he had a suit on the whole time. He never guest posed. So his friend Joseph Wilkosch won the show and Tom Platz was second.
In that pro Universe, huh?
Yeah. And that was like a month after the Olympia.
Was Dennis Tenorino in that show? Do you know the pro Universe?
He might have been. Yeah, it was Wilkosch first, Platz second, Bob Birdsong third, Albert Beckles fourth, Greg DeFaro fifth, and Muhammad McAway sixth. So none of the big names for the Olympia went in it.
I see.
Because they were so pissed off about Arnold.
Because I vaguely recall Dennis winning a pro Universe at the time where they took the title away from him. But I don't remember the reason why. He won the pro Universe, but they took the title away from him. I'm not sure why.
I kind of remember that too.
Yeah, I don't think it was a drug thing.
No.
I don't know what it was. I don't remember.
I think that was a couple of years earlier, wasn't it, Jerry?
Was it? I don't know. Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah.
I just remember it was some sort of pro Universe. It wasn't a NABBA show. It wasn't a NABBA.
I think it was because they said he did another organization, so then they took it away from him and they gave it to someone else.
Right. Yeah.
I think it was in the late 70s.
Okay. I see. Yeah. And that was an IFBB show, right?
Mm-hmm. It was the IFBB, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Then, of course, next year, a lot of those guys boycotted the Mr. Olympia. Frank Zane, Boyer Coe, Mike Benser, and Albert Beckles all boycotted the Mr. Olympia in 1981.
Because of the 80 results?
Yeah, because Arnold won, yeah. And then they also said that they heard Franco was going in it, and they said he's going to win. They tried to get Tom Platz and Roy Callender, Roger Walker, Chris Dickerson, they tried to get them all to boycott it. I think Chris Dickerson was going to boycott it at first, and then he figured, well, since I was second, I can win, you know, so he went in it. And Tom Platz was a big supporter of Arnold, so he went in it. And I asked Roger Walker, and Roger Walker said, well, I wasn't in the position that Boyer Coe and Mike Menzer and Frank Zane were in. They were the top guys. He goes, I was below them. So he goes, I didn't feel like I had the – I couldn't really boycott it. I didn't have the – I wasn't that high up, you know.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the other guys was just basically saw the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, Arnold as the promoter, Franco in the contest. I mean, you know, they saw a repeat performance of Sydney, except this time, instead of Arnold being the show, now it would be Franco.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to waste the time. And I think they actually made the right move.
Yeah, they did. The results speak for themselves.
I don't think anyone would have won that show other than Franco. The only way Franco, I was going to say the only way he would lose is if he really looked terrible, you know, but he wasn't at his best and still won.
Yeah, well, it was the legs. The legs were so out of proportion. I mean, I thought his upper body was just as good as it was before, but the legs were,
terrible. No, not a single cut in his leg. No.
You know? How are you going to beat guys like Tom Platz and Danny Padilla and Roy Callender? Those guys had great legs. Chris Dickerson had great legs, you know.
And they were in shape, too. They were at their best.
Oh, yeah, they were at their best, right.
Yeah, so 81, you could say, was also a ripoff.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, that's sad. But that's
a lot of people thought Dennis Tenorino should have did better in 1980. They thought he looked really good.
I thought he did, too. You know, yeah. Arnold had – Dennis had great abs, shoulders, I think he should have placed higher for sure.
His big point was his back, though, right? His back wasn't as good. Yeah.
He didn't have a lot of definition in his back. That's true.
Right. Right.
His legs weren't a strong point either.
Right.
They were passable, but not really great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But you know, he had a nice overall physique, you know, but he could have made the top five, I think. You know, he might have done that.
Yeah.
Or sixth.
You know. I thought Roy Callender looked good, too, in that show.
Yeah, Roy always showed up in pretty good shape. I can't think of a contest where he really looked bad, you know, where he looked terrible off.
Yeah.
You know, where he looked noticeably off. In some contests, he was better than others.
Remember in 1980, they had the Roger Walker and Roy Callender tied for sixth, and they had to do actually at the prejudging, they had to do a special pose down between those two to break the tie, and I think Roger Walker beat him. But actually, they had both of them in the pose down, so they had a seven-man pose down instead of a six-man pose down.
No kidding. Wow.
And then Roger Walker, that was his best ever shape. You know, he was from Australia. He was the hometown guy. So
right. Yeah.
But, man, he was thick and in great shape in that contest.
Yeah, I saw him in the photo standing next to Arnold. Arnold didn't dwarf him at all.
No. Mm-mm.
It wasn't a question where Arnold just completely overwhelmed the guy. No, it didn't happen. Yeah. Roger Walker actually had a more complete body than Arnold.
Yeah.
You know, Arnold had, you know, the arms and stuff like that. But, I mean, Roger Walker, if you go, you know, by the complete body, head to toe, Roger Walker would actually have beaten Arnold in a if they judged by every body part.
Yeah.
Or I should say the complete package. Because Arnold's legs were, again, noticeably off.
Yeah.
Just really off. And what you told me today, I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know that what Roy Duvall said, that he actually looked much worse in person than he showed up in the photos.
Yeah.
That adds to it even more, if you think about it. I mean, you know, it's like a travesty.
Yeah. Now, I know that you saw that interview I did with Roger Walker, and he said that he saw Arnold at his best, which was like 1974. Right. And he goes, in 1974, he wasn't human. He goes, people don't realize how good Arnold was. They said he was better than his photos. He looked unbelievable.
I would agree. Well, that's the year I went down to the beach with Arnold. Remember I told you this? That was 74, and that was 2 weeks before the Olympia.
Yeah.
And I like I said, the reaction of the average person to Arnold, people who never saw a bodybuilder, it was the looks on their face were the same as if an alien spaceship had landed on them. They could not believe their eyes.
Right.
Arnold, like, indescribable, you know, tremendous. I mean, he definitely the best. His legs were big. Calves look huge. Yeah. His waist relatively small. You know, and Arnold never had great abs, but he had pretty good abs, passable.
Yeah.
But he had freaking arms he had. Jeez.
Yeah.
I don't know how his arms are so thick looking, you know?
Yeah.
His arms actually looked bigger than they were. He's one of those crazy guys because when you see him in person, like you can never appreciate Arnold's arms in pictures. You had to see him in person at his best. And when I trained with him, when I used to do arms with him, he would always go like this. After we finished, he'd do this. He'd go like this with his arms. He'd just go like this in the mirror and look at him. And I remember looking at one of his biceps, and it looked like a small football. It was so big and thick, and had veins wrapped around. It looked like somebody had sewed a football onto his bones in his upper arm. I mean, it was huge.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at my own little puny arm, and I'm saying, Arnold, you bastard, you made me look like I never touched your weight. He laughed. You know.
Did you hear that story that Roger Walker said about Arnold winning the 80 Olympia where he said about the watch? Did you hear about that?
I don't remember. Remind me. What was it?
I asked him about Arnold winning the 1980 Mr. Olympia. He goes, let me ask you a question. He goes, if there was this special watch, they only made one watch like this in the whole world. It wasn't the cost of the watch. It was just a special, perfectly made watch.
Yeah.
And there was only one person that had this watch. And you walked into a bar one day, and there was a guy wearing that watch. And you know he didn't buy that watch. He stole it.
Right.
Said, what would you say to that guy? You stole the watch. He goes, well, Arnold stole the watch.
Well, that's a good way of putting it, I guess.
Yeah.
That's a good way, you know.
Because the Olympia was a special prize. It was the biggest title in the world, and Arnold didn't earn it. He stole it.
I never asked Arnold about the 80 Olympia. I think it might be a touchy subject for him.
Yeah, probably so.
I never brought it up, but I did ask him about that 70 universe he lost to Frank Zane.
Yeah.
Because, like I say, in the very first conversation I had with Arnold, he was complaining about how the contest was fixed and he showed me the medallion he had to wear. It had Frank's program at Frank. You know, he presented a convincing argument until I saw the magazines and realized Frank was in better shape.
Yeah.
And years later, you know, maybe 3 years ago, my phone rings. I said, "Hello." He says, "Hello, Jerry. This is Arnold." And I'm thinking, you know, whoever this is has got a great Arnold imitation voice. I said, all right. You're pretty good, but who is this really? He says, "No, it's Arnold, man." And I, "Come on, man. You know, Arnold wouldn't call me. I mean, I haven't seen, you know, I never gave my phone. But, you know, who are you, some sort of impressionist or something?" He says, "No, really, this is Arnold." He says, "I got your number from John Bailey." You know, anyway, it turns out he wanted to ask me some nutrition question, right? But the thing is, in the course of the conversation, I reminded him of that first conversation. I said, "Arnold, do you remember when you told me when you lost to Frank Zane in that first contest in America, that it was a ripoff in favor of Frank Zane? Do you still feel that way?" He said, "Honest truth, no." He said, "Frank was a deserving winner. I was off that day. Frank definitely deserved." I started to say, "What about 1980? And I caught myself. I mean, because we were having such a great conversation. And I reminded him, I said, "Arnold, you know, I just wrote something in my newsletter about how when you used to make your protein drinks, you used to add a little bit of liquor to the protein drink, you know, because you felt it increased the absorption of the protein." I said, I'm a little vague on that. Is that true?" He says, "Yeah. He says, "I used to add schnapps." That's what he said. He said, "That little schnapps to the protein drink, you know." So I got that right, you know. So we had a nice conversation. I didn't want to make it go downhill.
Yeah.
Actually, Sydney Olympia, so I didn't say anything, you know.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, I don't know how Arnold would handle that. I have a funny feeling if I had asked him about it and say, "Arnold, could you honestly, after all these years, say that you deserved to win the 80 Olympia? Would you say that?" I think that he would have said yes.
Yeah.
Here's what I think he would have said. He would have said, "Looking back, honestly, I wasn't at my best. But I think even the way I was still good enough to beat the rest of the guys." That's what he would say. Yeah. I believe that's what Arnold's answer would be.
Franco, the next year when he won in 1981, he totally believed he should have won.
Yeah, he's probably the only one that believed that other than Arnold. You know?
Now, I was at that show. I was, I think, 17.
Yeah.
17 or 18. And the whole crowd, Jerry, I'm not kidding, the whole crowd was booing. Booing.
I was just going to ask you what the audience reaction was.
They were actually taking their programs and throwing it at the judges. Some people were reaching into their pockets and grabbing change and throwing it at the judges.
Oh, my God. Wow.
It started at fifth place when Danny Padula got announced fifth. Everyone started booing. Then Roy Callender got fourth. The booing continued. Tom Platz third. The booing continued. And then after third, people were getting up and leaving. They didn't even want to see. And then they announced Dickerson second, continued booing. And then Joe Weider and Arnold didn't even come out on the stage
and
raise Franco's arms. It was some other guy. I think he was a sponsor or something. I don't even know who he was. It wasn't Ben Weider. It wasn't Joe Weider. It might have been Ben Weider, but not Joe Weider. He didn't do it. And they raised Franco's arms, and the people didn't stop booing. It was the most controversial show I've ever seen in my entire life.
But did Arnold come out on stage?
If you notice, he's giving him the trophy backstage.
Wow. So he didn't want to
get him to come on stage.
Arnold didn't want to risk getting hit by flying coins.
Right. Or Joe Weider. Joe Weider didn't want any part of it either.
Oh, my God. Hey, let me ask you. How did the other competitors react as they were, you know, reeling off the winners? I mean, did you notice the faces on like, Danny Padilla and Roy and Chris? I mean,
they were more like just shaking their heads, smiling like it's a joke. Tom Platz. And then they all walked off after. And the only one that stayed out there was, I think, Joseph Wilcosh and Tom Platz. And that was
right. You know, if you could read their minds at that point, I bet you what you'd hear is this: "I should have listened to the other guys."
Yeah.
Boycotted the show. They were I bet you that's what they were thinking at the time. You know, they saw it coming, man.
But I remember Franco saying in interviews, he's like, "Yeah, I deserved it. I was the best."
No objective person could ever say that he deserved it.
And I remember talking to Boyer Coe about it, and Boyer said, "How could you be happy winning a contest when you know Nobody right. thinks you should have won, and the whole audience booed.
Right. No, it's kind of like, you know, in boxing when Roy Jones Jr. competed in the Olympics. I mean, he beat the crap out of this Korean guy.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just a joke. And then at the, you know, it was held in Korea, the Olympics. At the end of the match, it was something like three rounds or something. You know, Roy Jones is standing there, and you can see, he has his arm ready to be picked up as the as the winner. Instead, they pick up the Korean. And yeah. the Korean, I'll never forget this, the Korean's face dropped. I mean,
he couldn't believe it, right.
His knees buckled. I mean, he thought he was, like, he didn't even believe it. How did I win? This guy beat me to death. And I won, and I vaguely remember. I could have sworn he went up and I think he grabbed raised Roy. I don't remember that. I think it might have happened, but it was one of those things, you know. I mean, where, what the hell is going on here?
Right.
You
know,
Franco beats guys. Every one of those guys was in better shape.
Yeah.
For crying out loud, I would bet the guys that even were in the top five were better than Franco.
Yeah.
But I will give credit. Franco had a fantastic upper body.
Yeah, he did. And he was super hard. He was really hard. And I noticed that the prejudging, he never stopped flexing. Like, he was going like this. He was squeezing down on his chest and abs. And he was always hard. But the other guys, you know, this is back in 1981, they were relaxed. When they were relaxed, they were relaxed, you know. But Franco never stopped flexing. And I don't know. I talked to Winston Roberts, who was a judge. And he said Franco was the hardest guy in the show, because I asked him, why'd you place Franco so high? And he said he was the only guy up there that was Mr. Olympia. And he said he was the hardest guy in the contest.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is, that might be true as far as the upper body goes. But you can't give a guy a contest who has half a body.
I know.
I don't care. Look, John, I don't care how hard his upper body is. You know, and the fact is, you know, whether he's flexed or not. I mean, I think he was flexing, I'm guessing, probably to divert attention from his legs.
To his upper body, yeah, right.
Look at this man. Look at those pectoral striations. At those deep abs, you know, so they wouldn't notice his lousy legs.
Yeah.
Mr. Olympia with half a body? Give me a break. Come on.
And plus, I talked to Roger Schwab, and Roger Schwab was the head judge. He wasn't actually judging, but he was in charge of all the judges.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, he made a good point. He said, you know, if you look at the audiences in the late 70s, early 80s, they were very sophisticated audiences. They knew bodybuilding, you know. So for the whole audience to boo.
Right.
I mean, like, they didn't know what they were talking about. Like, we didn't know what we were seeing. I mean, that whole audience knew what was going on, you know.
Clearly they knew. Clearly, right. You know. I mean, that's the way I remember we told you some funny stories about the New York audiences. Like,
yeah.
When they used to hold the various IFEB shows at the Brooklyn Academy of Music.
Yeah, another great example. Yeah,
I competed in a couple of and attended them as a bodybuilding fan. And let me tell you, when a guy was out of shape, the New York audiences would not pull back.
Right.
I used to feel sorry for the guy. So a guy would come in like with but some of them had like stomachs hanging out, you know. and the guys with the audience, you look like shit. You know, they're yelling at like, and this and that. And remember, right. I told you the funny story about the guy, an old time bodybuilder in the 40s, who did a guest routine at one of the contests.
Jack Dillinger, right?
No, it wasn't Jack, there was another guy.
Okay.
He was posing in the 40s, he still liked to pose with swords.
Right.
Like little props, things he saw. Right. So this guy brought out a sword and he had a nice little physique. He was a little short guy. I think it might have been Ed Thierold, if I remember correctly. You remember a guy named Ed Thierold? I think it might have been him. And he's doing this artistic routine where he's posing with the sword and stuff like that. But for some reason, and the guy wasn't in that bad a shape, but I don't know why the New York audience didn't like him. And they started yelling things out. And I'll never forget this. It was I wish there was a video camera in those days. He's posing with the thing. And when they first started yelling things, he was ignoring him. He just kept doing his routine like he wasn't. Finally, it was too much, and he takes the sword, he jams it into the posing platform, you know, and he says, if you think you could do better, you come up on stage. And the audience gave him a standing ovation. That, I'll never forget, that was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. That was hilarious. You know, so my, you know, but the point I'm trying to make is I'm underscoring what you said about the audiences being much more sophisticated. They would let you know how they felt. I mean, and, yeah. and they knew what to look like. I mean, they knew what to look at, look for. Say. They knew what should win. I mean, the prevailing notion in those days was my personal philosophy, which was that the guy with the best overall physique, symmetry and proportions, definition and size should win.
Right.
And if you, and that's the winner. If you don't have that, you shouldn't win. A guy with big giant arms or big legs should win.
Right.
I mean, there was a guy a couple of years ago, can't remember his name, he had a strange name. This guy, this was just a couple of years ago. This guy had the biggest calves I've ever seen in my life. Frankenheimer, I can't remember his name.
Strange name. Eric. Yeah, Eric Frankenhauser. Yeah.
Yeah, Frankenhauser. That's it. I mean, when I first looked at it, I said, no, it can't be. This has got to be photography. I've never seen a guy with calves when viewed from the front that were wider than his thighs.
Right.
Thighs. And I'm thinking, whoa. I'm thinking if they judged on calves, this guy would be Mr. Olympia 10 times in a row. Because nobody, even the guy with great calves like Mike Matarazzo and some other guys, nobody came close to this guy's calves.
Yeah.
People watching this should look him up on Google. Look at this guy's calves. They were freaky. But, you know, there's an old saying in the Bible, the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. In other words, he had this magnificent legs, but his upper body was completely mediocre. So he never won. He won a couple of shows. I think he won in North America and then just disappeared.
Yeah.
Because, and again, the reason, didn't have a complete body.
Right.
He had half a body. This time it was the lower body.
Right.
But, you know, his upper body was way behind. His legs were so freaky that for him to have an upper body to match those legs, he'd have to look like Arnold in the upper body. Right. Totally well. Right. The poor guy didn't have bone structure for that.
Yeah.
So he just, he probably trains wherever he is. I'm sure he still works out, but he dropped out of competition. You know,
he
knew he couldn't win.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Hey, Jerry, let me ask you about some of these other guys in the Olympia. What'd you think of Mike Mentzer in 1980? Mike took second to Frank Zane the year before in 79 by one. He was actually winning the prejudging, and then Frank Zane beat him in the pose down. So Mike trained all year just for that Olympia and ended up getting fifth. And then that was his last contest ever. He never competed after that.
Right. Yeah. Well, Mike took that loss very, you know, he talked about it the rest of his life. He thought it was a terrible ripoff. And I saw him train for that. I mean, the guy was in great shape.
Yeah.
I mean, for that year, he was, Mike and I used to joke because we both had this commonality. I mean, I was never in his class. I'm not comparing myself to him.
Yeah.
But we used to joke that we weren't as vascular as the other guys. You know, a lot of the guys already had the veins popping out. I didn't have the big arm veins and stuff like that. And he says, well, I don't either, you know. But that year, he did get very veiny. I mean, he got in really good shape.
Yeah.
And, when he left, I didn't know that Arnold was going to compete, you know. Arnold had told me he was going to be a commentator, and I believed him, you know. So when Mike left, I thought, honestly, that it would be – my feeling was it would be between him and Dickerson. That's what I thought it would be him and Chris. Either one would win. That's what I believed.
Right.
And maybe if Danny Padilla showed up, he'd be in there too, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, those are the three I thought would dominate. Of course, Arnold wasn't even in my thinking because he wasn't supposed to compete.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if
they would have had a more objective group of judges, and if Arnold wouldn't have went in it, I wonder if it would have been between Mike Mentzer and Chris Dickerson.
I think it might have. I think it might have. I mean, looking at Mike's physique, he had what they call like a Herculean physique.
Yeah.
Very thick. You know, I mean, he had big calves. He had, you know, a nice leg shape. He had good arms.
Great legs, yeah.
He had very big forearms. His back wasn't super separated, but it was enough, you know, passable. What I'm trying to say is Mike had the head-to-toe body.
Yeah.
He had a complete body, and he was pretty symmetrical. I mean, so, you know, he wasn't, again, as separated as the guys today. He wasn't, you know, didn't have the kind of grainy look. You know, some of these guys, it looked like their skin is peeled off, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't have that, but he came in pretty hard.
He had a hard look. Yeah, he had a rough-looking look, you know, a Herculean look, like you said.
That's what I mean, you know. But, I mean, again, I would agree with you. I think that if a different judging panel, if Arnold hadn't competed, I think it would have come down to him and Chris Dickerson.
Yeah.
In fact, I'll be honest with you, between the two, I probably would myself, assuming both guys are in top shape, I would have given a slight edge to Mike because of, you know, a better, as great as Chris was, and Chris was fantastic because he managed to have, he had some extremely weak muscle groups, but he was such a great poser and he knew how to present himself so well that, you know, you almost didn't even notice that he had lousy button, almost no bicep development at all, weak tricep, but you know, the rest of them, and his back wasn't that great, but you know, the rest of them was so good. And he, and the way he posed was so excellent that you, you kind of didn't notice it. But you know, if you're really looking at it, like judging between him and Mike, if you go body part for body part, I'd have to give it to Mensah because Mensah had much better arms, much thicker, and just a kind of bigger guy, also in hard shape, you know. So I would give Mensah, I would have given Mensah the edge
over Chris. What I noticed in 1980, comparing him to like 79 when he took second to Zane, was his chest looked kind of flat. This was almost like he tried too hard to get ripped and maybe he flattened out a little bit, you know.
You talking about in 80?
Yeah, in 80, yeah.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, he might have done that. Because I know we trained really, really hard for that, you know.
Of course, you remember reading that story? I think I read it. I think it was Jack Neary's report in Muscle and Fitness about the 1980 Olympia. He said that when Mensah got to Australia, he turned the heat up in his hotel room where it was like a sauna. And he stayed in his hotel room and he was like in a sauna all day to get rid of that water. So I think maybe he might have overdid it. Maybe would have, he came in a little flat because of the dehydration, you know.
It could very well be, you know. I mean, that's what happens. That's what happens with the diuretics.
Yeah.
If you take too much, people have to understand water, muscle is 72% water.
Yeah.
Ideally, when you take a diuretic, you just want to take away the extracellular water between the skin and the muscle. You don't want to take the intracellular water or the muscle water away because then you get a flat-looking appearance, see?
It's interesting you mentioned that because, you know, I know all the people today take diuretics. All even bikini girls take diuretics.
All of them do, yeah.
I wonder back then, I don't know anything about what they did with drugs back then, but, I mean, look at what Mensah went through. He didn't take a diuretic. He increased the heat in his hotel room to sweat it out, you know? Yeah. And I remember talking about Arnold when he came to Australia and Franco looked at him, he said, what the hell did you do? I remember he said the night before, I read this in one of the magazines, Arnold said he posed for 3 hours in his room to get rid of that water.
Wow.
And he said when he just collapsed in bed, he was exhausted. He posed for 3 hours.
Wow. You know, I'm not even sure exactly when the diuretics came into bodybuilding real heavy.
Must have been later on, right?
Yeah, I don't recall guys in the 70s and even up to 1980 using diuretics. I
remember competing in my 20s, and this was like 1985, 1986, and the gym I went to was a hardcore bodybuilding gym. And everybody that competed, we would all dehydrate, no water at all, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 3 days. Friday, I mean, everybody did the same thing. So nobody was taking diuretics back then either. We were just dehydrating our bodies, you know.
Well, the problem with that is that, as would happen with Mike or even Arnold,
you flatten out.
You know, you could flatten out with that too if you go overboard.
Yeah,
it's difficult. You know, it's a little bit difficult to control. You know, even with the diuretic drugs, if you use the stronger ones like Lasix, you can easily slip into an overkill effect.
Yeah,
that's why when they use the diuretics, they use stuff like the like aldactone or the thiazides. These are much milder, with the hope that, again, they'll get rid of only the extracellular water, not the intracellular and intramuscular water, which would definitely flatten them, you know, make them look really flat.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky, kind of slippery slope when you use diuretics.
Yeah.
And, of course, if you really go overboard, then you get the cramping where, you know, you ever see these guys
on stage like Paul DeLette did?
I've seen guys where suddenly, like, they look like they're turning into Robbie the Robot. I mean, they can't, you know, they all right, double up. They go like, I mean, you can always tell when a guy's taking or the guys when their legs start cramping. You ever see it? They start to shake their legs.
Yeah.
They look like they're ready to do some sort of.
Right.
It's a You know what I mean? Those are the guys that really went crazy on diuretics.
Or
an alternative reasoning is that they took the diuretics but forgot to replace the minerals. That, see, diuretics are, they're like a shotgun effect. They get rid of sodium and water, but they also get rid of calcium, magnesium, potassium, other minerals that you need to prevent the cramping.
Right.
So if you don't replace those other minerals, you know, you're going to be like those guys. You're going to be all cramped up and messed up.
Yeah.
You know? So hopefully over the years, they've learned from experience, you know, to how to use those electrolytes so that doesn't happen. You don't see it as much anymore. Because they've learned from experience, you know, if you're going to take the diuretic, and as you said, diuretics, I mean, I see these bikini girls, you know, I see diuretics written all over them. I mean, every one of them, it's almost like they might as well be wearing a hat with a neon sign saying, I'm on diuretics.
Yeah.
I mean, they're sunken in faces and stuff like that.
But they all take them.
Oh, they're taking them. There's no question about it.
Even local shows, the smaller shows, they're all taking them.
I know. You know, if they did a drug testing for diuretics at the last
one,
I think who would be left? Nobody. You know, they have a couple of IFBB officials standing, you know, with an ounce. Everybody was disqualified. Anyone in the audience wanted to? That would be funny. I'm telling you, I think it was, what was it, the 90 Olympia? A couple of guys got kicked out because they got caught with diuretics, because that's the year they drug tested, 90. I think most of it was steroids, but some of them had diuretics show up too.
Well, actually, 96, I remember they did diuretic testing then because, well, we had Mohammed Benaziza die in 92. And then I think Munzer died in 96. So I think by 96 at the Olympia, actually, Nasser El-Sambadi was going to take, I think he took third because Dorian won and Sean Ray was second and Nasser got third. And then he failed the test later on.
Oh, okay.
He looked great. That was the best Nasser ever looked, I thought. And he ended up losing.
So he failed for diuretics?
He failed for diuretics, yeah.
I remember writing how strange it was that they were, you realize that they were only testing for diuretics?
That's it, yeah.
They weren't testing for growth. Well, there was no test for growth. No test for steroids at all.
No, mm-mm. Only diuretics. They did that for 1990, yeah.
And when I asked, I think it was Wayne DeVille, I asked him, why only diuretics? He says, because that's the drug that can kill you right away.
Yes,
steroids won't kill you right away, but, you know.
Like I said, I think in 92, Benaziza died, and then I think Munzer died in 96.
Yeah, yeah. But in other words, he was right about that. That was actually scientifically true.
Yeah.
I mean, you take enough diuretics and your electrolytes go low enough, you could actually die in a matter of hours. It's not why.
Yeah.
But it's just strange that with the prevalent drug being anabolic steroids, that they would test for diuretics but not steroids.
Right, that was
kind of odd. You know? Yeah.
Hey, what'd you think of Boyer Coe in the 1980 Olympia?
He looked very good.
Yeah, he did.
Boyer always showed up in shape, you know. He's another guy that rarely, rarely looked out of shape, you know.
Yeah.
Boyer maximized his body. He did the best what he could, you know. I mean, just tremendous arms. I mean, you know, Boyer, if I remember, he had a double split in his bicep or something, you know.
And he had certain poses that no one else could do but him. You notice that?
Right. The only other guy I've ever seen that had that double split in his bicep like that, I mean, on top of his peak, there was like a split.
Yeah.
There was a bodybuilder named Freddy Ortiz who competed. He competed back east, even the early IFBB shows in the 60s. He had a little guy about 5'4". He had these like tremendous arms. I mean, unbelievable. But when he flexed, he had a peak on top of a peak with a split in it. The only other guy who duplicated that was Boyer.
Yeah.
You know? Well, that's a genetic thing. I mean, you can't. Yeah. I mean, you can't. There's nothing you can do. Concentrating curls from now until the next century. You know, it's not going to happen unless you
have. Boyer told me his dad had it.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's like when I asked what's his name? Rich Gasparri.
Yeah.
When I asked him once, I said, "Rich, how'd you get all those veins all over the place?" It's because he was very vascular. He says, my father had, he's, if you see him, he's got the same thing. He's got veins everywhere. He says, it's just genetic. Yeah. He says, you know, and you know, you lower your body fat. If the veins are there, they come out. He says, that's what happens. I didn't do anything special.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about Zane in that Olympia too. That was the one he lost. So he had that injury. In retrospect, he probably shouldn't even done it, right?
Yeah, wasn't that the thing where he was like lying in the sun? And the story I was told, I mean, this is horrible to think about, but I never confirmed it with Frank, but I was told that he was lying in the sun and I don't know whether it was in Palm Springs somewhere, I don't remember. And, you know, getting up out of this thing he was lying in, his penis got caught in it.
And no, like, I think what happened was the chair broke. And he hit himself on the curb of the pool where it goes into the pool, and he broke his urethra.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And then he lost a lot of blood. He was bleeding, and they had to go to the hospital. And then I think he was in the hospital for a while. He lost a lot of blood, and then he ended up losing a lot of weight.
Wow.
And I guess going into that show, he would have been his best ever. They said he would have been heavier than 79, and he would have been ripped. So he would have, if he wouldn't have had that accident and Arnold would have went in, I think his aim would have won.
He definitely shouldn't have competed, John. I have to agree with that.
But he talked to Arnold. Did you ever hear that story? Because he used to go to Arnold and pose for him every year, you know, when Arnold was promoting it. Yeah. And then he went and posed, and he said, well, what do you think, Arnold? Do you think I should do it? Because I'm not going to be at my best. And Arnold goes, no, I think you should go, and you should do it anyways and defend the title. Even if you're not at your best, I think you can still win. And then Zane goes, well, what about you? He goes, you're looking pretty big. I heard you're going to do it. I heard rumors. And he said, no, I'm just getting ready for Conan the Barbarian. I'm not going in it. He goes, I'll be there. He goes, I'm going to be doing commentating, but I'm not going to the contest.
Yeah. Well, Arnold had an ulterior motive for wanting Frank Zane. We both know what it is, right?
Yeah, the year before.
Right? You remember that famous interview Arnold did?
Yeah.
When he won one of his Mr. Olympias.
The year before. Yeah.
Arnold, you know, as the microphone is in a suit and tie. And he says, so tell me, Frank, how does it feel winning the Mr. Olympia again? And so Frank looks at him and says, Arnold, it feels almost as good as the time I beat you back in 1970. And Arnold was Mr. Cool most of the time, but I'll never forget, I saw a flicker on his face of anger. I saw he clenched his jaw for a second.
Yeah.
If you ever see, you gotta look carefully, you know. And he caught himself. He didn't say anything. I don't remember how he responded, but he didn't make a big issue of it. But Arnold, you know, Arnold didn't like that, you know, that because he did that, you know, Frank did it in public. And Arnold, I understand, was very angry about it. And
he called
up Frank and was yelling at him and stuff. It kind of reminds me of the time when Barack Obama, he was speaking at one of these, they have an annual reporters dinner where, you know, everybody tells jokes, including the president, gets up on, you know, Bush did it and Barack Obama. And Barack Obama started telling jokes about Donald Trump.
Right.
And the camera went on Trump, who was sitting in the audience. And everybody around Trump was laughing at Barack because Barack was kind of making fun because Trump at the time was talking about how Obama wasn't really from the United States. He was from
and
all that. And Obama was making jokes about it, you know. And like I said, the camera panned over to Donald Trump. Everyone around him, including the women he was with, they were all laughing. But Donald Trump was stone-faced. He was visibly angry, you know. He just a slight smirk on his face. And the story is that that's when Trump vowed that he was going to run for. That's what did it. That dinner did it. I mean, so you know, getting back to Arnold and Zane, I would see where Arnold would want Zane to, you know, especially if Zane wasn't in top shape, Arnold would get his revenge for Zane's remark by beating him at the Olympia. That was kind of cool if you think about it on Arnold's part. Arnold should have been more honest with it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he should have said, listen, Frank, don't go in, you know, if you're not – like Dorian Yates. Dorian Yates' philosophy was he told me after he stopped competing, you know, he said, if I can't compete at 100%, I don't compete at all.
Right.
He says, and the injuries I had didn't allow me to compete at 100%, so that's when I retired.
Yeah. You
know, that's the proper – at that level, I think that's the proper attitude to have. Even if you're a former Mr. Olympia, if you can't come in at 100% best, I would say don't compete because you're just going to tarnish. People are only look at you at your last contest. You know, they'll look at a guy like Frank and say, you know, some people, not the smarter ones, but let's say the troll types.
Yeah.
Zane won it three times. Look, he couldn't even win this. He's overrated. He's not as good as people say. Look, he couldn't even win the Olympia again, you know.
Yeah.
The man wasn't in shape, you know, he had an accident. But, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of people that think like that. They shouldn't, but they do.
Yeah. So
that's the reality of the world.
Yeah. You know? Well, I'll tell you that contest was it's still controversial to this day. But if Arnold wouldn't have went in it, it probably would have been a Mr. Olympia that we don't even talk about. You know, it would have been Zane would have won, or Dickerson would have won, or Mike Benson would have won. But it would have just been another year. It wouldn't have been no big deal.
Sure. Well, look at the contest after 81. Look, I mean 82, then 83 Samir. I mean, all great guys. Don't get me wrong. Great. Does anyone ever talk about it?
No.
All they do is say, you know, the only mention you hear is, oh, Chris, yeah, Chris won the Olympia in 82. But Samir, he was 83. That's it.
Right.
There's no attention. You know, how did he look? But nothing. Nobody. That's it. There's no controversy whatsoever. Nothing. Right. And then when Lee started winning, was it 84 or 85?
The 84. First
year? I mean, you know, for the next 8 years, no controversy at all. Nothing really. The closest it came to controversy was the 90 show.
Yeah.
Where that was the only drug test in Olympia, where I think I told you the story, Lee Labrada actually beat him in the prejudging.
Yeah.
And then at the night show, Lee came back to win. And one of the judges told me that Lee won on his presentation.
Yeah.
And I said, wait a minute. I said, are you saying that Lee Haney's a better poser than Lee Labrada? Lee Labrada at the time was the best poser in bodybuilding. You know, I'm thinking, he says, no, Jerry, you don't understand what presentation means. I said, well, explain it to me. He said, presentation means the ability to show your body at its best. And we felt that Lee presented his body better at night than Lee Labrada, which to this day, I don't understand. Don't ask me to explain that reason. I have no idea what he was talking about. All I know is that Lee Labrada was like a human ballet dancer. He was like a statue in motion. This guy was such a great poser.
Right.
Another guy in that category was Muhammad Makaway. Remember him?
Right. Oh yeah, sure.
He was around in the 80s. You know, he was a fantastic. Vince Garanda worked with him a lot on the poser.
Yeah. Yeah.
Helped him a lot. I mean, very beautiful to pose.
Yeah.
And of course, Ed Corney. What can you say about Ed Corney?
Right.
Another, geez, Ed Corney was such a good poser that even people, I've been to contests where, where people who I've been around there, they have no interest in the bodybuilder. I mean, the women would say, that guy's ugly, or he's got too much muscle. They'd comment, you know. But when Ed Corney came on, they start to put him down. Then when they see Ed's doing this great posing, they suddenly were mystified. They said, wow, this guy's really interesting. I mean, his posing was so good that it would actually interest a person who has no other interest in body.
Absolutely. For sure.
That's how good a poser he was. Yeah.
Well, I guess what I was saying is, like, they always say Arnold is like the Muhammad Ali of bodybuilding. And he was just such a presence and such a personality, you know, that by him going in that 1980 Olympia, even though a lot of people said he shouldn't have won and what he did was wrong, he sure did make it exciting, though. He sure did make that year exciting.
He did make it exciting, yeah. But, John, I remember reading somewhere, didn't he also get booed quite a bit when they announced the winner?
Yeah, I talked to a few people about that. They said there was a lot of booing, and then it sort of turned into cheers. So,
it did?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it was as bad as 81.
Yeah, no, 81 was, throwing coins at
me. I was there. All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to Jerry Branum for joining us for another great and informative and entertaining interview. I love talking to Jerry. Next week, we will continue our discussion on the year 1980 in bodybuilding. We're going to talk about the AAU Mr. America, which was won by Gary Leonard. And we're also going to talk about the IFBB Mr. Universe, which was held in the Philippines. And then we're going to talk about some of the Grand Prix shows that they held that year, including the Night of the Champions, which was also won by Chris Dickerson. So that will be next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I want to thank our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. I also want to thank all you Patreon donors who are generously donating money each month to the podcast. If you're interested in becoming a Patreon donor, you can just go to the bodybuildinglegendsshow.com website. That's our official website. And in the upper right-hand corner, we have a link to be a Patreon donor. All right. Now, before I let you guys go, I do want to finish our article here that was from Pat Comer about the Mr. America contest. All right. So this part of the article, they were talking about all the different competitors that were in the 1970 AAU Mr. America. And they say Chuck Colras was the first to appear on the closing platform. Here is a fellow with a very unusual physique in that it is an exceptionally well cut up and with a great deal of definition as anyone has seen. He is 38 and he's been training for 18 years, competing for 14 years, and at 5'8", weighs 158 pounds. His goal is the Mr. America crown, but he's done many other things along the way, such as squat with 415, deadlift 485, and powerlift a total of 1220. Unofficially, he's done 340, 440, and 485 for a 1265 total. He attended Santa Monica College and is now employed as an electrical technician, and he's won the Mr. West Coast, the Mr. Los Angeles, and the Mr. California titles. He placed fifth in the Mr. America in 1968. The next man on the posing platform was Brian Marshall of Gold's Gym. He has a nice physique, but is a bit slender at 6 feet tall and 195 pounds and will improve a lot. He sells food supplements. At 5'10 and 200 pounds, Paul Hill has a very fine physique, which has won him the Mr. Pacific Coast title. He's been training for 5 years, and he had a story in the May Ironman and his photo on the back cover. Ken Waller is known to all bodybuilders for his tremendous physique, which is very massive and yet very symmetrical. The first time we saw Ken, he had a great physique, but his posing was very poor. He's improved his posing routine tremendously, but we believe that some judges feel he needs a little more work in this area. He is 6 feet tall, and he weighs a solid, hard 225. He's been training for only 4 years, and he was a former football star and a captain of his team. He was the All-Conference, and he has won the Mr. USA and the Mr. YMCA America. Last year, he was third in the Mr. America, but the year before, he was fourth, and this year, he made it to second. And if he continues, next year ought to be his big year. We've had Ken's story in the previous issue of Ironman. Joseph Dodd, at 5'11 and 200 pounds, is a well-built fellow who has won quite a few titles, including Mr. Garden State, Mr. New Jersey Power, Mr. Delaware Valley, Mr. New Jersey District. He's also a good powerlifter with a 1235 total, including a 500 deadlift. He was a good athlete at Trenton State College, and he's now teaching mentally retarded children. He was not always a Superman. When he started training at 16, he weighed a huge 110 pounds at 5'11". So you see he's gained 90 pounds of solid muscle. Ed Corney at 36 and weighing 175 at 5'6 is one of the shorter fellows, but he has a fine physique, which won him the Mr. Western USA, Mr. Pacific Coast, and Mr. Western America, plus 10 other top titles. He's been training for 10 years, and he can squat with 425. He was an outstanding high school and college athlete, and he holds the black belt in judo. He works as an engineering technical writer and overseas representative for Kaiser Aluminum. Ellington Darden at 26, we had Ellington on the show not too long ago, weight 205 at 5'11". He looks taller because of his trim waist and broad shoulders. He's been training for 8 years, and he's won such titles as Mr. South, Mr. Western Hemisphere, Mr. Southeast, and Mr. Texas. He's also a good Olympic lifter and also a good power lifter, with a 1,400 total, including a 400 bench, 500 squat, and deadlift. He was an outstanding athlete in many fields in high school and college, and he's presently a graduate student, and he has great ambitions for service to his fellow man, as well as to win the Mr. America title someday. He has some definite ideas about diet that we hope to present someday, and he's written quite a lengthy research paper on protein in the diet, which should indicate that some caution should be used in ingesting huge quantities of protein. Howard Allen is a really big fellow at 6'3 and 248 pounds. He has trained 6 years, and he won the Mr. Southwest, Mr. Oklahoma, and Mr. Oil Capital. And he's also a good power lifter with a 425, 500, and 605, and a 1530 total. He was an outstanding lineman in his senior year at Tulsa University.
He's also outstanding in other branches of athletics such as skin diving, skydiving, and rodeo. He's also a physical therapist and a head athletic trainer for University of Tulsa. Chris Dickerson is a man you have heard much of and have seen on many covers in recent months. Chris says that he feels that his victory proves that America is a great country where everyone has equal opportunity regardless of race, color, or creed to reach the top with hard work and persistence. Chris has had many defeats over the past 5 years, but he's been competing, but he never gave up, and he finally won the top title. He feels his winning will help prove that the criticism often leveled to the Mr. America contest that a Negro could never win is groundless. In fact, this past year should prove to anyone that Negroes, who now seem to wish to be known as Blacks, can win the top titles, for they have won the Mr. Britain, the Mr. America, the Mr. USA, the Junior Mr. America, and the IFBB Mr. Olympia, and others. I believe some of the whites wonder if they are going to be able to win in the future. Chris is a strong Mr. America, and he can make a powerlift total of 1175. At 5'6", he is rather short for a Mr. America winner, but he proved that a short man can win top honors too if he has what it takes. And the 184 pounds of massive, shapely muscularity is what it takes. Chris has won the Junior Mr. America this year, as well as the Mr. USA in 1968 and the Mr. California in 1967. He studied music at Columbia University, and when he went to California this year to train at Bill Pearl's gym, he had employment with NBC. He plans to pursue a career as a singer, and he just appeared on the Johnny Carson show for the second time. Annabelle Lopez is 5'5" and weighs 160. He has a physique that is really outstanding in shape and symmetry, not quite as massive as some. He makes up for it with his ability to present his physique artistically and impressively. He's been training for 6 years, and he's won the Mr. New York City, Mr. New York State, Mr. Region, and other titles. He works for the New York City Post Office. Annabelle will go far if he continues to train. Dennis Yaklich was the next man to pose. Dennis is a great powerlifter as well as a physique man, and he has an 1865 total with a fine 550, 590, and 725 set of lifts. He's also a good Olympic lifter with a 920 total. Dennis is majoring in math at Southern Colorado State. He's a very fine physique, and with more bodybuilding training and less powerlifting, he could possibly reach the top. Dennis is 6'4", and he weighs 240. Paul Love has been training 7 years, and he seems to improve each year. Paul does a lot of lifting, and he has a powerlift total of 1420, and he's won the Mr. Golden West and the Mr. California titles, among others. He attended Colorado State University, and he has a 100-yard dash time of 9.5. How about that? He's a turbine mechanic, and he also acts as a counselor to young boys at Juvenile Hall. James Blancart weighed 187 at 6 feet tall, and he's won the Mr. Mexico, Mr. Chihuahua, Mr. Border, Mr. Durango State, and Mr. Riviera. In high school, he tossed the shot 50 feet and the discus 135 feet. He attended Mexico City University, and he works as an electrician. James Morris, Jim Morris, who won the title in 72, I think, or 73, is considered one of the top men in the country, and he weighs 212 at 5'11", and he's won the Junior Mr. USA, the Mr. California, the Mr. New York State, and others. In fact, about eight other firsts. He also has a fine 1570 powerlift total. He attended Pratt Institute in New York, and he majored in architecture. He now works as a sales representative for a Carnation company. Joseph Teat, at a height of 6 feet and a body weight of 210, is also a powerful-looking fellow and a man who is a good lifter, also having done a 1420 powerlift total, also an 865 Olympic total. He was an outstanding football player at Ryder College in Trenton, New Jersey. He's a physical education teacher and an assistant football coach. He's won Mr. New Jersey, Mr. Garden State, and Mr. Trenton, as well as the Mr. Trenton powerlift. Henry Jinks was probably the smallest man there, being only 5'3", but having a fine physique at 140 pounds. Henry has won no first, but he has placed high in a lot of contests, and he enjoys competition. He has a 950 powerlift total, and he trains at Denny's Gym. Bill St. John always looks a little better each year, and his fine physique rates up there with the best. He's also a very strong fellow with a powerlift total of 1515, an Olympic total of 905. He's won the Mr. Eastern USA, the Mr. Chesapeake Bay, and he was second at the Mr. USA last year, and he placed fourth in the Mr. America. He studied electronics in college, and he's a naval ordnance technician. He was the state high school wrestling champion and an excellent gymnast. He's a well-known for his title, winning abdominals. Robert Holden is a bulky fellow of 5'9 and 200 pounds who has been training 10 years, and he has a nice powerlifting total of 13'10. He's won the Mr. Washington, D.C., the Mr. Capital District, Mr. Sunshine State, Mr. Gold Coast, Mr. Southern States, and powerlift and Olympic lifting contest. He is studying for his PhD at American University, and he has many other talents. William Grant has trained for 10 years, and last year he won the title at the Mr. USA for Best Poser. He has improved a lot over the last year, and we are sure he will do better each year. He's developed a pair of very broad and powerful shoulders. He has a 1285 powerlift total, and he's won a lot of titles, including Mr. Suburban, Mr. New Jersey, and many other firsts. He attended Los Angeles City College, and he presently works in the United Airlines flight operations. Alex McNeil is 5'9 and weighs 208, and he has a very powerful build. He's won the Mr. South Atlantic and others, and he attended Utica Junior College and works as a policeman. Gary Hill at 6 feet and 200 pounds is of the more slender type, but he has a nice physique, and he has been training 10 years, starting at 5'11 and weighing 135 pounds. He is presently a deputy sheriff. Casey Viator had a story in this issue, so we'll not go into detail on him. Casey has a powerlift total of 1380. Chuck Amato had his story in Iron Man a short time ago, and he's improved a great deal since that time, and he is one of the most muscular-appearing fellows in the show. At 5'9 and 190, he's pretty bulky, but because of his muscularity and fine posing routine, he does not give the impression of bulk. He has an 1155 powerlift total, and he's won the Mr. Portland, Mr. Oregon, Mr. Western USA, and others. He studied at Portland State University and at present is a recreation director. He has a great future in this game, we think. Leonard Huntley is 5'9", weighs 191. He's trained 12 years. He won the Mr. Muscles, Mr. Power, and Mr. Western New York, and others. He's a sky cap with American Airlines. Clinton Burrile at 21 is 5'10", tall, and he weighs 200. And he's won the Junior Mr. Inland Empire and others. He's an apprentice machinist. Art Peacock is 5'11", weighs 190, and he's been training 8 years. He recently had his story in Ironman. He attended Cambridge in London, and he's a fleet sales and leasing specialist with a local dealer. Wayne Anderson at 5'6½ and 179 pounds has won the Mr. Fremont, Mr. Junior Northern California, and Mr. Northern California, and he has a fine build. He has a 1335 powerlift total, and he works at a Musilin salesman. Scott Cooper has a very symmetrical physique at 5'9", 185 pounds body weight. He's won the Mr. Florida, Mr. Southwest, and others. He also has a 1425 powerlift total, and he attends the University of Miami. He also owns a health food store in Coral Gables, Florida. Vic Tanney Jr. is 5'7", weighs 180, has a very outstanding physique and a very pleasing personality. He's won the Mr. Teenage California and the Junior Mr. California and the Junior Mr. Los Angeles. He attends Moore Park Junior College, and should he continue training, which we are sure he will, as he says his whole family trains with weights, and his dad is the famous Vic Tanney, he should soon be placing very high in the Mr. America contest. He came up to 8th place this year, and that is very good. And we were much impressed with this fine group of competitors. All of them expressed high ideals and ambitions to help others improve their health. And many of them are now working with young people to help them improve their outlook on life and to develop themselves physically, mentally, and spiritually. We feel this was a very outstanding group of young Americans and a credit to the game. Wow, what a great article. So they went over every single competitor in the Mr. America contest, which I think was about 29 competitors. It's interesting how they mentioned the powerlift total, and they also have the full judging breakdown, like all the points. So they awarded points. It wasn't a placement system. And they have all the points from every judge for every competitor. So it was really great. What a great article. I mean, they really went into detail. And they also have the body part awards. So best abdominals went to Chuck Amato. And then, as we mentioned in our interview with Jerry a couple weeks ago, best arms, best back, and best chest all went to Casey Viator. And best legs went to Chris Dickerson. And it looks like Chris Dickerson also won the most muscular award because they have the points here. So let me make sure that's right. Yeah, I think he won the most muscular award too, which is interesting. I thought Casey would have won that. So yeah, some of these names here. Ken Waller, of course, went on to fame with the IFBB, and then Casey won the next year in 1971. Bill St. John's is a familiar name. Chuck Amato, as you mentioned, he won the best abs. Annabelle Lopez, who we've had on the podcast before, he had a long career in bodybuilding. And Annabelle was a natural bodybuilder. Vic Tanney Jr., of course, as they said, his father was the famous Vic Tanney who owned the gyms. Ed Corney was in 11th place. And Ed, of course, went on to win the Mr. America, Mr. Universe in the IFBB and became a top pro bodybuilder, the greatest poser in the bodybuilding world. Bill Grant was in 12th. Alex McNeil, that's another famous name. Ellington Darden, of course, we've had him on the show. It's interesting that Ellington wrote a paper about protein when he went on to write all these books in the future. So that was interesting to sort of see where his career was going. Art Peacock, who is still around and still, I think, competes in his 80s. So that was interesting. I wonder how old Art was. Let's see, who else? Clinton Barile, of course, a great bodybuilder who really reached his peak in the mid-70s. This was 1970, but I remember him in the 1975 America that Del Adrian won. He looked really good there. 1976, when Cal Scalak won, he looked really good there. I think he was also competing in the later 70s, 77, 78. Had really great vascularity, especially in his deltoids. Paul Love went on to be a promoter later on. He promoted the MPC Nationals in San Jose, California, that Bob Paris won. So, yeah, really, really great and interesting article. So thank you to Pat Comer again for sending me that. And they've got some pictures in here. They got a really good picture of Bill Grant. You could tell he was going to do well in the future. Thanks again to Pat. And then Pat is going to send me an article about the Night of the Champions from 1980 that I will read next week on the podcast. All right, so that is it for our show. Rest in peace, Peter McGough. Don't forget about my fitness challenge, guys. Go to johnhansonfitness.com if you're thinking about starting it. It starts next Monday. So tell your family, join it yourself. I guarantee you, you're going to make incredible progress. johnhansonfitness.com. And we will see you guys next week. Happy New Year. Take care.